Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the State of Florida Sports Podcast, presented by the USA Today Network. Here's your host, Tim Walters.
If you would have looked at Florida's three NFL teams just 6 weeks ago, the Miami Dolphins easily would have been the team that seemed to be the biggest lock to make the playoffs. The Dolphins were 8-3, winners of 5 in a row, and vying for the top spot in the AFC East. Tampa Bay was 5-6 and struggling to stay on top of the lackluster NFC South. And the Jacksonville Jaguars were 4-7 and 3 games out of first place in the AFC South. In the time since, the football world in the state has been turned upside down. The Dolphins lost 5 of their last 6 games, barely squeezing into the playoffs as a wild card team. The Buccaneers won 3 of their next 5 games and clinched the NFC South in Week 17. They lost their final game in Week 18. And the Jaguars won their final 5 games, with the Titans losing 7 in a row, giving the Jaguars the AFC South crown and a home playoff game. It's the first time since the 1999 season that all three teams made the playoffs. To say the NFL is unpredictable is an understatement. Today, I welcome in 3 journalists to discuss each team's playoffs journey. Hello again, everybody. I'm Tim Walters, and thank you once again for joining me on the State of Florida Sports Podcast, powered by the USA Today Network. This podcast utilizes our Florida Sports Network of beat writers, columnists, and some special guests to bring you up to speed on the most important sports topics. Our Florida network consists of 17 news sites that encompass the state. We encourage you to subscribe to your hometown newspaper, and of course, this podcast, to support the incredible journalism done by our talented staffs. Today, I'll be utilizing 3 members of those talented staffs. Joe Shad of the Palm Beach Post has covered the Miami Dolphins for years. He hasn't seen the team hyped as much as it was earlier in the season, only to see a late-season collapse. Luke Easterling covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for USA Today and BucksWire.com, and is a frequent guest on the podcast. And Demetrius Harvey covers the Jaguars for the Florida Times-Union in Jacksonville. He was just with us last week as the Jags fought to make the playoffs, and now he's back to talk about their first playoff game in 5 years. So let's get right down to it, and we'll start with Joe. Joe, welcome back to the podcast.
What's up, Tim?
Hey, before we start even getting into the game or anything, if we would have had this discussion last week, would you have thought that the Dolphins would have made it, or do you think they would have been left for the scrap heap?
I did think that the Dolphins were going to make the playoffs. I thought that they would beat the Jets, especially once I found out that Joe Flacco was starting for them. I thought Skylar Thompson would be fine, and he was, with no turnovers. The Jets didn't have anything to play for. I certainly thought that playing inspired football for DeMar Hamlin, that the Bills would defeat the Patriots, and they did handily.
Yeah, that was something, the start of that game with the kickoff return for the touchdown. But, you know, when you look at the Dolphins-Jets, and, you know, one of the weirder things, you mentioned Joe Flacco starting for the Jets. He started week 1 and week 18 for the Jets, but he didn't start most of the games in between, so that was a little odd to see. But, you know, Skylar Thompson, he did just enough to win. Jeff Wilson and Raheem Mostert had about 70 yards each, so they ran well against a good defense. What was the big takeaway from that victory yesterday? Is any type of confidence growing in Thompson? Are they going to try and run it more against the Bills? So, you know, what do you take away from Sunday's game?
Well, yeah, I mean, the Dolphins want to run it, and to have a chance to win at Buffalo, they're going to have to run it. It's a good thing they acquired Jeff Wilson via trade from the 49ers, because Raheem Mostert reportedly has a broken thumb, and so it's going to be pretty hard to carry the ball with a broken thumb. And that's a shame, because Mostert has really given them some inspired running in recent weeks. Very physical, you know, breaking tackles, the kinds of runs we really haven't seen since the Dolphins' playoff run with Jay Ajayi in 2016. But, you know, Thompson is a, you know, solid player. He's a worthwhile developmental project. It's obviously unfortunate that the Dolphins have to roll him out in these huge situations, a must-win game against the Jets and then a playoff game at Buffalo. I mean, there's a reason that the Dolphins are underdogs by 10.5 or more points, depending on which line is your favorite. But, you know, listen, Thompson does have some mobility and he has a strong arm.
Well, let's recap the first two meetings before we talk about this week's game. The first time they played, it was week 3. It was about 134 degrees in Miami. Stephon Diggs said that he was going to pass out from the heat. It was a super close game. Tua had an okay game that time with 186 yards and a touchdown. The departed Chase Edmonds led all rushers on the Dolphins with 21 yards, but he had 2 touchdowns. Meanwhile, Josh Allen threw for 400 yards, 2 touchdowns. Yet the Bills only managed 19 points, and of course you had the butt punt in that game. In round 2, the Dolphins almost posted a big second half comeback, and maybe they just took a half to warm up because that was a freezing game, the total opposite of Miami. Tua had 234 yards, 2 touchdowns, and Raheem Mostert had 136 yards rushing in that game, and Allen, of course, was great with 304 yards and 4 touchdowns. So when you look at round 3, once again up in Buffalo in the cold, how do you see this one playing out?
I mean, it's really difficult to envision the Dolphins winning the playoff game in Buffalo. I mean, just getting to the playoffs is an achievement. But it is a little bit of a break that the Dolphins at least face a team with which they have great familiarity. You know, they did at least play reasonably well in both of the previous matchups. So they will, by the time the ball kicks off, believe they have an opportunity to win. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. I mean, Josh Allen has basically averaged 3 or 4 touchdowns every single time these teams have met. Stephon Diggs is a very difficult cover for Xavier Howard, who's been banged up and not very good all season. The Dolphins are just decimated by injury. You know, they're completely depleted at offensive tackle. They're banged up at running back, corner, defensive line. I mean, this is just it's really tough, but I just hope it's not ugly.
Yeah, how do you think the weather is going to affect things, or do you think at this point it doesn't matter? It looks like it's going to be about in the mid-20s when they play.
Yeah, I mean, the Dolphins are used to it. You know, I have a winter coat. I'm sure they do, too. I'm sure they'll have the heated benches and the ski caps, and they know what to do with the long johns and the Vaseline on the arms, anything to keep their bodies warm. So, you know, I don't think it'll play a huge factor unless there's extraordinary wind or snow. And at the moment, we're not seeing that.
It, because of the adversity the teams had to deal with at the quarterback position there, it's kind of hard to say during the 5-game losing streak before they win on Sunday, you know, how the defense is playing. So, you know, they only give up, 3 points on Sunday. So how do you assess the Dolphins' play over the last 6 weeks on defense?
Well, the defense, yeah, I mean, the defensive coordinator, Josh Boyer, his job is in jeopardy, and he knows it based on our last conversation with him. The defense is underperformed overall. You look at outstanding individual performances from players like Christian Wilkins and Jalen Phillips, you know, to have the defense perform in terms of points per game, yards per game, turnovers, third down defense. Even Joe Flacco was successful on third down. It just doesn't make any sense. So, you know, again, a group decimated by injuries, Emmanuel Ogba, Byron Jones, Brandon Jones, and others. You know, yeah, I mean, listen, they gave up a long drive to Joe Flacco that allowed the game to be tied at 6, but at least they didn't give up a touchdown to a Jets team that I don't believe has scored a touchdown in his last 3 games.
Yeah, the Jets offense has been just plain bad. So have to see what happens with them next year as Joe Flacco, Zach Wilson, Mike White, you know, who knows what's going on there. But, you know, as for the Dolphins, one of the things you don't really think about when you think of special teams is just, you know, stopping a guy from scoring touchdowns constantly. But Nyheim Hines scored 2 on Sunday. How good are these Dolphins special teams at stopping that type of thing? Because, you know, that guy, ever since he's been acquired from the Colts, you thought he might be able to help their run game, but he's really been more of a game breaker for them on special teams more than just on Sunday.
Yeah, the Dolphins special team coach is Danny Crossman, who used to be the Bills special teams coach. And it's been an absolutely atrocious, embarrassing, humiliating year for the Dolphins on special teams. Jason Sanders did at least make a critical field goal, of course, to win a game for the Dolphins the other day. But prior to Sunday's game, the Dolphins had the second worst field goal percentage in the NFL over the last 2 years. This year, they're one of the worst in the league at punt return, kick return, punt coverage, and kick coverage. So they're just horrible. And it doesn't make any sense because they have some, you know, players who are specifically paid to be effective special teams players. So Crossman is another guy whose job is in jeopardy. And, you know, I was glad to see Tyreek Hill actually run back there and try to return a punt. I suggested to him last week that he just go out there and just, no matter, you know, just say, I got it, even if that's not the plan. And I don't know if that's what happened, but he did, you know, he did not return a punt, but he was at least on the field for a punt return. It's kind of weird. Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill, two of the most explosive returners in history, and neither one has been utilized in that capacity throughout the year. I'm assuming it's to protect them from injury, but, you know, it's been so pathetic that you would think maybe in the postseason, you know, maybe on Sunday they give Tyreek, depending on how he's feeling. I mean, he and Jalen both do have ankle injuries now.
Yeah, and I know you wrote about that recently, about having Tyreek Hill possibly return kicks. So, you know, definitely check out all of Joe's work at palmbeachpost.com. Now, Joe, right now, as I mentioned in the intro, we have all three teams from the state of Florida in the playoffs, but certainly none of the three looking spectacular, maybe the Jaguars being the hottest of the three. But if you look at them hosting an AFC South game, the Buccaneers hosting an NFC South game, and the Dolphins going up to the cold north of Buffalo, whose chances do you like best out of the three teams this upcoming Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say the Jaguars. Jaguars fans were very mad at me. It wasn't a specific shot at them, but earlier in the year when they and the Bucs had losing records and were poised to win their divisions, which they eventually did do, I said that I thought that the NFL should change the rule so that the division winner with the fourth best record is not guaranteed a home playoff game. I think it's kind of lame, to be honest, that, for example, the Bucs get to host the Cowboys when clearly, you know, the Bucs are not that good and they have a much worse record. And so, you know, kudos to the Jaguars for at least finishing strong. Clearly, they're much better off with Doug Peterson than they were with Urban Meyer. Clearly, Trevor Lawrence is starting to live up to his draft status. It's interesting to see all these really young, exciting, 20-something-year-old quarterbacks, especially in the AFC. But to answer your question, I mean, I suppose that the Jaguars would have the best chance, especially with the Chargers having some key injuries. For some reason, Joey Bosa and Mike Williams were playing in a game on Sunday in which the Chargers were already locked into their playoff position. That makes no sense. And now both players were injured. And Justin Herbert, as much as I love his extraordinary physical tools, he's the kind of guy who could throw a couple of huge, terrible interceptions.
Yeah, definitely. And he actually ended up being second in the league in passing yards. He just barely overtook Tom Brady late in that game last night for that second spot behind Patrick Mahomes. But, you know, I think Jaguars fans become Dolphins fans because if the Dolphins somehow upset the Bills and if the Jaguars win, then it would be the Dolphins, I believe, that would get the Chiefs instead of the Jaguars. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how all of that shakes out. But you mentioned the Dolphins being double-digit underdogs there against the Bills. If you were, you know, taking this as an over-under, would you, because it sounds like you already have picked the Bills to win, would you take the Dolphins possibly to cover the spread?
Not if Tua Tagovailoa is not playing. If Tua somehow unexpectedly and miraculously is cleared to play, then I'll consider it because, you know, the Dolphins have had some big plays with Tua to Tyreek and Tua to Jalen against the Bills. It's just really hard to envision them beating the Bills with either a seventh-round rookie, Skylar Thompson, a guy with a broken finger or dislocated finger, and Teddy Bridgewater, or I guess Mike Glennon is an option in an emergency.
Good grief. Well, yeah, you know, I didn't ask you about Tua, just assuming he probably wouldn't play. Is there a chance they could try and clear him this week?
I mean, it certainly seems unlikely. Head coach Mike McDaniel referenced in his post-game press conference that he wasn't going to get into any speculation about whether Tua would play again this year or next year. Now, I'm not suggesting that he was implying that Tua wouldn't be available to play next year. I guess just the fact that he used the words next year leads me to believe that, you know, maybe they don't have a great deal of confidence in him returning. Listen, you can never rule it out, but it seems to me to be unlikely, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, that's going to definitely be a big story this offseason to see what the Dolphins are going to do about their future at quarterback there. But for now, they at least have one more game. It's against the Buffalo Bills up there in Buffalo. Joe, is there anything else you want to add about this game before I let you go?
No, just that I'm looking forward to going back to Buffalo. I feel better prepared. I lost the keys to my car rental the last time I was there, and that caused a big problem. I had to tow my car out of the parking lot. So, and also I had a hard time getting around the police blockades to get into the stadium. So I feel like I get a little bit of a do-over, and I guess you could say the Dolphins do too.
Well, I'll be up there in Jacksonville where it should be a beautiful 50, 55 degrees. So I'll be thinking of you as you're freezing up there.
It's not that bad in the press box.
There you go. Well, Joe, I appreciate it as always. Again, PalmBeachPost.com. And we look forward to follow along with you on this on Sunday when the Dolphins play the Bills.
Thanks, bud.
Luke, thanks for joining me yet again on the podcast.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Tim. We always have a good time, don't we?
Absolutely. And this time we're going to be talking some playoffs. All three teams in the state of Florida making it, which is just incredible. But let's look at the Bucs first. The team that clinched their division first, yet they're just not that great a team. They lost their last game of the season yesterday. Brady played a little bit more than half a game. But, you know, as they struggle along, they're in the NFC South. So what do you think of this team right now as they get ready to play the Cowboys, a team that they did beat earlier in the season, and we'll talk about that game in a minute, but what do you think of this Bucs team right now as they head into the playoffs?
I mean, I wish I could tell you what to think, Tim. I don't know that we know much about what this team is capable of right now. There's been, you know, small stretches where they looked like, you know, a Super Bowl caliber team. I think that game they played against Dallas, even with their offensive struggles, the defense played so well, and we've seen some of that this year. I think maybe the best we've seen from this team was that first half against Cincinnati, right? A few weeks ago, where they're up 17-0 late in that first half and were just dominating on defense against one of the most explosive offenses in the league. They were making big plays and finding the end zone instead of settling for field goals on offense. And it was just, you know, that's what I think all the Bucs fans were waiting to see, that type of performance from this team. Obviously, it was only a half and they lost that game to the Bengals. You know, you saw the second half against Carolina, which was really nice. And you saw the explosive plays between Brady and Mike Evans. Finally, you know, they've had four double digit fourth quarter comeback wins this season, but they were all against really bad teams, Tim. So it's really hard to be even excited about those because they played really poorly against those bad teams for 3.9 quarters and just happened to make it happen at the end, mostly because they have the greatest quarterback of all time. So, you know, I don't know that we know much about this team. There are, you know, some key players that they need to get healthy this week. And obviously having a Monday night game, that extra day will help with that. But still, just way too many question marks with this team on both sides of the ball, even the coaching and some of the decisions we've seen this year. I really don't know that we still at this point know who the 2022-2023 Buccaneers are at all.
Yeah, you know, let's talk about that first time that they played in week one, because I mean, look, I know Dak Prescott got injured, but that happened in the fourth quarter. So Dallas got out to a 3-0 lead, and then the Bucs run off 19 consecutive points. The defense shuts them down. So what has been the main difference from then to now? And, you know, how do you like them matching up against the Cowboys this weekend?
Well, I think, honestly, the defense has struggled because of injuries, and the defense has struggled because the offense has struggled. And, you know, we hear players talk and coaches talk all year about complementary football, right, to the point where it becomes a cliche. But the Buccaneers season has been a prime example of what happens when you don't play complementary football, because there's been so many games for the Bucs this season where you've had The offense just can't move the ball and can't score. And you've got the defense, even when they've been healthy, you know, making stops and making stops. And if you do that for three and a half quarters, eventually, if the offense just can't sustain drives and they're putting the defense out on the field over and over and over again with three and outs and forcing them to be out on the field way more than they should, eventually you get to the fourth quarter, you're exhausted. You break down. You miss tackles. You miss assignments. You're miscommunicating because you're tired because you've been on the field all game long. And a part of it is morale. As much as they probably won't admit it on any team, but players, when the other side of the ball isn't pulling their weight, it's frustrating. It's demoralizing when you're going out there and handling your job and you're getting off the field on third downs and you're making big plays and sacks and takeaways and those sorts of things. And then you give it to Tom Brady and this talented offense and they can't move the chains. They can't get first downs. They can't score touchdowns in the red zone, and they're settling for field goals over and over. It's frustrating that everybody's not pulling their side of the bargain. So I think that's what's happened when the Bucs have lost this season. It's been because the defense just finally gets worn down late in these games and can't keep up with an offense that just can't score points. Again, the Bucs were one of the worst teams in the league in terms of scoring points this year after averaging 30 points a game for the last two seasons. So, you know, whatever the reasons are, the coaching, the scheme, the play calling, the offensive line injuries, whatever, I think it really has come back to haunt the defense in particular. And it's just, that's been the story of the Bucs team this year, is that they just haven't been very good at playing complementary football, to the point where the defense's efforts have not been enough late in games because they're too tired and the offense just hasn't been good enough at all.
Yeah, it's insane when you look at Tom Brady's numbers to think of, you know, them only averaging, 18 or 19 points a game. He set an all-time NFL completion record this year with 490 completions. He was third in the league in passing with 4,694 yards, and he really would have been second had he played the whole game yesterday. And now he's heading into his 48th playoff spot, adding to a record he's owned for a long time. And if you're wondering, Jerry Rice is next at 29 starts, so I don't think he'll be getting 19 or 20 more. So when you look at Brady, and you mentioned frustration, we've seen him frustrated this year, you know, how, and also one other key fact is this is the first time he's actually had a losing record as a starting quarterback. So it took him until age 45 to go 8-9 or worse, given that he's been 9-7 or better. It's just insane to look at those numbers and think that this is an 8-9 team. So how has Brady been able to navigate this? Because we have seen him as frustrated and angry as we've seen him in many games.
I mean, I don't know how he's navigated it, except for the fact that he's always done it, right? I mean, he's had adversity in the past. He's had teams that weren't as talented. He's had injuries that he's had to overcome and play through. So I think for him, you know, he's the GOAT for a reason, right? He's the greatest of all time because I think not necessarily his physical ability, but his commitment to excellence in every way, down to the way, obviously, his, you know, TB12, the lifestyle stuff, and how, you know, his training regimen and how he's been able to keep himself, you know, durable and healthy for this long of a career is ridiculous. But I think that's a mental thing too, and I think that's really been vital to this team being able to push through all that adversity. Yeah, they have a losing record and the season didn't go as well as they wanted to, but whether they were 13-4 or 8-9, they still won the division this year, just like they did last year. They still have a home playoff game and they're the 4 seed instead of the 2 seed, which they were last year, and that didn't do them much good when they lost to the Rams at home. So, you know, you look at it and say, even with all the problems that this team has had to overcome, they still have everything ahead of them. They won their division. They got a home playoff game. They're the number 4 seed. They still, everything's back to zero now. So if anything, I think if you're Tom Brady, you're looking at it and saying, huh, nobody's ever won the Super Bowl with a losing record in the regular season. Why don't I add that to my list of things that are just ridiculous about my career? And I think nobody would be surprised if he did.
Ah, so are you saying he's done that on purpose, losing yesterday, so he could add another ridiculous record?
I don't think it's ever going to be in Tom Brady to lose on purpose for any reason. I think that's why he played at all on Sunday, was because he just couldn't stomach the idea of not going out there and competing, at least for a little while. So I don't think he'll ever lose on purpose, but I think he'll get a good laugh out of it if he gets a Super Bowl as the only ever quarterback to do it after having a losing record. I think he'll get a good laugh.
Hey, you know, he was one of only 10 quarterbacks this year that started all 17 games at 45 years old. That is just absolutely ridiculous and incredible. But Who is a player on the Bucks not named Tom Brady or Mike Evans that absolutely needs to step up this weekend when they, or it's Monday actually, when they play the Dallas Cowboys?
You know, I'll give you one on each side of the ball, if you don't mind. I think on defense, it's got to be Anthony Nelson. This is a guy who has stepped up in a big way since they lost Shaq Barrett to the torn Achilles earlier in the season. Anthony Nelson has 5.5 sacks, which is not a lot if you're Shaq Barrett, but it's a lot if you're a backup who's been thrust into a starting role. More importantly, some of those sacks have been really, really clutch, right? In the last two wins, the Arizona comeback win and the Carolina comeback win, that they needed to have both of those wins to clinch the NFC South the way they did. And Nelson had a strip sack late in both of those games that helped secure that win and allow that comeback. So he's making big plays. He's a free agent after this season too, so he's making himself a lot of money. The Bucks are going to need more big plays from him because, again, Shaq Barrett's out for the season. They are going to need that type of presence in the pass rush to step up. And on offense, I think it's Russell Gage. You know, this is a wide receiver they gave a 3-year, $30 million contract to in free agency. And you know, Mike Evans, obviously future Hall of Famer. You got Chris Godwin, the Pro Bowler in the slot. Russell Gage was paid in the offseason to be that number three guy. Antonio Brown's gone. They don't have that third target. He's been injured for basically since training camp for most of the year. He got a hamstring injury that he just couldn't get over in training camp. So it's taken the entire season basically for him to get fully healthy and to develop some chemistry with Tom Brady now that he's healthy. And he ended up ending the season with 5 touchdown catches, which is second on the team. So I think that third wide receiver spot is going to be key. If he's healthy, we've seen what he can do while opposing defenses are focused on trying to stop Brady, trying to stop Evans and Godwin and even Fournette and Rashad White in the backfield. I think if Russell Gage can live up to that $10 million a year price tag now that he's fully healthy and he's built some rapport with Brady now over the last few weeks, that could be a huge X factor for this offense in the playoffs.
Yeah, certainly. And of course, on the other side of the ball, you're looking at Dallas and they've got a heck of a running game. You know, Dak Prescott, I guess you're going to have to hope maybe that he's the one that maybe makes a mistake kind of like he did against the Jaguars, because Pollard's been good all year and Ezekiel Elliott. So it's going to be a heck of a test to see that. Now, let's say, Luke, the Buccaneers do lose at home on Monday night. Is this the last time we'll see Brady in a Buccaneers jersey? And do you think next year he might pop up in a Dolphins, 49ers, Raiders, or even maybe a Patriots jersey?
You know, I think it's probably still 50-50 if I had to guess that he'll be here or somewhere else, whether that's retired or on another team. I think if I had to stack it a little more specifically, I think that it's probably more likely that he would, if he's going to play, I still think it makes the most sense to do it in Tampa, because if you're going to try to run it back and run and win a Super Bowl or be competitive for another year, doing it in a place where you've been for 3 years now, you have, look at who's going to be back this year. I know they got to make some tough decisions with some other free agents, but Mike Evans is still going to be there. Chris Godwin's still going to be there. You're going to have Tristan Wirfs and Donovan Smith and Ryan Jensen, your Pro Bowl center, will be back at full strength. He's practicing already, by the way, this week, and there's a small chance he could actually play Monday night after having that knee injury back in July. But there's so much stability that Tom Brady will have in Tampa Bay, and so much familiarity and continuity. And those are words that if you listen to him closely over the last few years, even throughout his career, he has talked so much about the importance of those things in terms of being able to be a winning football team. So if I look at a guy who's going to be 46 years old going into his 24th NFL season, if he's going to play next year, it makes so much more sense to do it in a place where, A, he knows he can win because he's already done it. He's won a Super Bowl here. Most of those key players are going to be back next year. And if you go anywhere else, you go to Miami, you go to San Francisco, you go to Las Vegas, you go to New England again, like, you're starting over in some way. And obviously some of those franchises would be a bigger start over than others, but you're a whole new team, a whole new group of teammates, a whole new offensive scheme, a whole new, you know, and obviously if you go to the Raiders, you have some familiarity with the offense with McDaniels. You go to New England, you've got some familiarity with that team and that coaching staff to a degree. But I don't know, man. If he's going to play again, it doesn't make much sense for me to see him at this point in his career, at his age, to try to go start over again somewhere else for a year or two instead of giving the Bucks another year and trying to do it that way. So, which, if he comes back, it'll actually be cheaper for the Bucks than if he leaves. So he'll actually save them some cap space if he comes back instead of having to pay out all the dead money from the other years on his contract. So I think it'll make sense if he walks away. It'll make sense if he comes back. If he does come back, I still think it's more likely that he does it in Tampa Bay than anywhere else.
All right, I see what you're saying, but if I'm Tom Brady and I'm looking at Miami with Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle, that's something I'd be salivating over as a quarterback. But yeah, that's going to be a big story all offseason. The Buccaneers come into this game as 3-point dogs. How do you like this one going?
I'm not putting any money on this whatsoever, and that is because of both teams. I think both teams this year have had stretches where we've seen glimpses. I talked about the Cowboys or the Bengals game for the Bucks and the Panthers game at the end there. They've been spurts where they've looked like, okay, there's the Super Bowl champion. There's the team that we think they can be. Dallas has been the same way. I feel like they've had longer stretches, obviously, where they've had some complete games where they've looked really, really dominant this season for four quarters. But you wouldn't know that if you watched them this weekend against Washington, right? They looked awful against Washington. They on both sides of the ball, the defense wasn't making enough plays against a rookie quarterback making his first start, and Sam Howell, he was gashing them for big plays down the field. You had Dak Prescott again with the turnovers. The run game was not working at all. So there's both of these teams. There's so much about them that we still don't know what to expect that I just wouldn't be comfortable putting any money on this whatsoever. You'd think it'd be an easy call for the Dallas Cowboys, right? You've got the 12-5 team against the team with the losing record. That should be an easy call, right? But, you know, if you watched again, both of these teams play for depending on the game you pick, you could say, oh, that's a Super Bowl champion, or, oh, that team's got to have the number one pick in the draft. They look so bad. So I'm staying away from this one as a bettor. But hopefully, again, it's Monday night. It's the star against the GOAT. You've got all the reasons that this is going to be a primetime game and the last game on the wild card slate for a reason. It's going to have all eyes on them. Hopefully the fans get an entertaining game or the Bucks blow them out. I'll take it either way.
All right, last question. Since you're not going to pick that one, I'll give you maybe one that's a little bit easier. If you had to take just one Florida NFL team this upcoming weekend, the Jaguars, the Dolphins, or the Buccaneers, who are you taking to win their game?
I'm taking the Jags easy. You know, they get the home game and they don't have any pressure. You know, the Bucks will have a little bit of that because they're the team with the losing record. So I think people expect Dallas to win, but they've still got Tom Brady. They still got enough talent. I feel like there's some pressure on them there to maximize that. Jacksonville, everybody's just going to be like, hey, they're happy to be here. They won the AFC South. They made the playoffs. That's their seasons of victory already, right? But you've got a Chargers team coming to town that, yeah, they got Justin Herbert, but they're banged up. They had some injuries on Sunday in a game that really didn't matter in the seeding. So there's some questions there for Brandon Staley, the Chargers coach. Mike Williams is banged up now. Joey Bosa is banged up. You know, the offensive line has been banged up already all season. So the defense hasn't played as well as it's supposed to. So I feel like I'm most comfortable with that crowd in Jacksonville being excited to have a home playoff game for the first time in a long time. The Chargers coming in there, they're going to have a pretty stiff challenge. Miami going to cold Buffalo, I don't like that very much. Again, the Bucks and Cowboys could go either way. I really like the Jaguars to win this game against the Chargers on Sunday.
What a funny league the NFL is. Imagine if 1 year ago someone would have said to you after the Urban Meyer debacle, the Jaguars, all three would be in the playoffs and the Jags would have the best chance to win.
Hey, I love it. It's almost like removing Urban Meyer from a situation makes everything better, that much better. It's ridiculous.
Well, that is hilarious. Luke, we look forward to seeing your work here as you, again, you work for USA Today and BucksWire.com, and we can follow along with you on social media where?
Oh, it's pretty simple. It's just at Luke Easterling, just like it sounds. And again, at the BucksWire, at the DraftWire, if you're a fan of another team and want to see what your team's up to in the draft.
All right. And if the Buccaneers do win, we will be talking with you again next week.
Hey, here's hoping, man.
All right, Luke, thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you soon. Okay, let's turn our attention to those Cinderella Jaguars. First, let me welcome in Demetrius. Demetrius, thanks for joining me for the second podcast in a row.
Absolutely, no problem.
Yeah, it's been a heck of a season covering this team. When they were at 4-8 following that Lions loss, did you even have an inkling that they could run off five straight wins and win the division while Tennessee was losing seven in a row?
Absolutely not. And I'll call anyone a liar if they say that they had what's happened, you know, in their minds after that Lions loss. I thought, like anybody else, naturally sort of 4-8. I think Tennessee might have been 7-4 at that time or you know, something like that. They weren't on their sort of terrible run at that point. Or at least we didn't think they were. So The Jaguars lost terribly. They couldn't live up to the expectations, you know, after that Baltimore win. You know, Trevor Lawrence, we actually didn't even know if he was going to be good or not. You know, obviously he came back into that game, but you didn't know how bad that foot injury was. At first they thought it was a knee, and then it was a foot, and then it was a toe. So yeah, absolutely not. I couldn't have envisioned that they would be able to pull off this type of run, but they really have. And it's been, you know, a tremendous effort by obviously, you know, Doug Peterson and the entire team just to be able to rally the troops like he has. It's just remarkable. I just couldn't have envisioned it.
Yeah. I mean, the offense quite frankly played its worst game since that Lions game, this past weekend when they, you know, barely got by the Tennessee Titans to win the AFC, and they can certainly thank special teams and defense for that. You know, what happened in that game? The offense had been looking so good. They had been clicking. Trevor Lawrence was very mundane. The running game was non-existent. What do you think happened in that game? Was it just kind of the jitters of what was going on, or, you know, how did you see it?
Yeah, I mean, a couple things happened, and obviously, the Jaguars couldn't run the football at all. I mean, they had 19 total yards. It's their fewest yards total on the ground in a win in history. So basically, that shouldn't have even happened. They should have lost that game. What really occurred, though, was the time of possession. I don't know how many people realize this, but by the time the first half was over, I believe the Jags only had three possessions, and they might have had a couple in the second half. I mean, there weren't very many opportunities. They fumbled the football on one of those possessions. They punted on another. I mean, they were down 10-0 for a reason. It was just that the Titans were able to control the game in a way where it mitigated what the Jags offense could even do. They couldn't get into a rhythm because of the turnover on the football. And then obviously the Titans just held the ball for just so long. So 36 minutes for the Titans, 23 minutes, and that counts the kneel downs at the end for the Jaguars. So it was just a perfect storm for the Titans to actually steal one there, and they just couldn't come through. So, you know, it was just a credit to the Jaguars defense, I guess, and a credit to their special teams too.
Yeah, it was a heck of a Saturday night win. Let's look at what happened Sunday against their now upcoming opponent, the Los Angeles Chargers. The Ravens lost earlier in the day, which means the Chargers were locked into that number five spot. Yet most of their starters were out there, and you see Mike Williams leave with an apparent back injury. Joey Bosa, who had only played two games after coming off surgery for a groin injury, and he may have re-aggravated that. And Staley still, you know, he said he stands behind his action to play those guys. What did you make of that? And you know, what the first time around when they played in week three, and we'll talk about that game in a minute, but they didn't have Keenan McCardell for that game, but they had Mike Williams. Now it might be vice versa. So what do you think of what happened there with the Chargers yesterday?
Yeah, I was confused just like everybody else. You know, the Chargers were locked into the fifth seed. They can't get any better. They can't get any worse. So I mean, frankly, they didn't have anything to play for. I guess other than just beating the Broncos, which, I mean, everybody had them winning anyway, it really didn't make any sense. I mean, Justin Herbert played 81% of the snaps. You had guys out there that, you know, frankly, you know, if they got hurt, their season's over. Like, if Justin Herbert had gotten hurt during that game, you know, who would have had them beating the Jaguars this week? No one. So it was just a weird move for them to do it, because I don't really necessarily see that any great benefit to playing your guys. I mean, you could just have, you know, an extra rest. Like you said, Mike Williams got hurt. Who knows how the back injury is going to affect his ability to suit up this week. But I mean, if he can't go against the Jaguars, that's huge for them. And then obviously Keenan Allen coming back, they didn't have to face him last time. So, you know, that's definitely going to be a threat. But yeah, I didn't think that it was something that Staley should have done. I thought that obviously you would want to rest your guys. Even the Jaguars, the week of the Texans game, they still had some stuff to play for, but they rested guys after they were up, you know, I think it was 23-3 at that point, you know, something like that. So it's a situation where, you know, you don't expect it, but I guess that's just the route he went.
Yeah, and, you know, the first time around when these teams played, they played in week three, out in Los Angeles, the Jaguars won 38-10. Now, again, there were a lot of injury problems with Los Angeles then as well. I mean, you look at Justin Herbert. He was playing through a really bad rib injury that he had suffered just 10 days prior. He really struggled. The Jaguars defense, that was kind of one of their real coming out parties, although they just shut the Colts out the prior week. So I think people realized that this team was a lot better. So coming into this game, it's a 1-point spread in favor of the Chargers. So it's essentially a push. What matchups do you like here, and how do you see this one playing out this Saturday night?
Yeah, I mean, I still like how what the Jaguars were able to do the first go-around. I think that they relied on their ground game a bit. Obviously, it wasn't the best showing out of ETN. He only had 3.5 yards per carry. But, you know, James Robinson at that time, when he was with the team, he was able to take off on a 50-yard rushing touchdown that sort of turned the tide in the way of, you know, a blowout win for the Jaguars. I think that making sure that they can go ahead and run the football against this Chargers team, which isn't that great against the run, that's sort of the goal this week. Travis Etienne obviously didn't have a great game on Saturday against the Titans. I think that that's something they're going to have to exploit moving forward. Then the last thing is sort of just Trevor, obviously. You know, he has to be able to throw the ball well. You know, he hasn't really gotten into that rhythm the past few games. Even that Houston game, he had a few off-target throws against the Titans. Obviously, he was off-target. You know, the one to Zay Jones stands out, or the one that didn't go to Zay Jones, I should say, stands out. So those are the type of matchups that you're going to watch. And then on defense, just I think the Jaguars' defense is sort of coming into their own at the perfect time. They have to keep applying pressure to the quarterback. Justin Herbert is no longer dealing with basically broken ribs. So, you know, he's going to be able to scramble around a little bit more than they're used to, you know, from week three. But I think that, you know, they match up pretty well against the Chargers offense as long as they can just sort of keep Austin Eckler at bay.
Yeah, I have a feeling one of the reasons this game drew that primetime Saturday night spot, obviously, is your quarterback. So you have Trevor Lawrence, budding star, finally living up to what people had hoped. You've got Justin Herbert. He was second in the league in passing yards this year. And, you know, now look at the rest of the teams in the playoffs. Patrick Mahomes with the Chiefs, Joe Burrow with the Bengals, Josh Allen with the Bills. And then the other two playoff teams, the Dolphins and Ravens, they'll be without their starters. But Tua had an incredible year, obviously very injury prone. And Lamar Jackson is a former MVP. So when you look around the AFC, the strength of the quarterbacks and the guys that are playing, when you hear those names, what do you think about the future? And how tough is it going to be for the Jaguars to maintain this? Because it is a bright future. But when you look at those other guys around, we're in for a fun decade of football.
Oh my goodness, yes. The AFC are the kings of the quarterback. I mean, if you look at the NFC side, I mean, who can you even name? You know, Dak Prescott, Jalen Hurts, and after that, I'm sort of lost. You know, Kyler Murray has been in that conversation, but not really. So this AFC, you know, it's crazy how good or how talented these quarterbacks are within the AFC. Like you said, Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Herbert, Lamar Jackson, Tua when he's healthy and able, and then obviously Trevor Lawrence. So this is going to be, you know, all these guys are really young. It's going to be a crazy, you know, decade of football. But I think the one thing Jaguar fans, you know, should take solace in is you have one of those guys. I truly believe that. I think that Trevor Lawrence should be thought of just like a Joe Burrow, just like a Josh Allen or a Patrick Mahomes, or you know, maybe not to the highest tier of how good those guys are, but you know, at least, you know, in that same realm. So it's going to be a tough sledding for the Jaguars to, you know, continue this run throughout the years, but at least they have their guy and they're not off searching like the Texans or the Colts or any other team.
Nope, absolutely. And even their defense, I mean, look, Trayvon Walker, he played so well against Tennessee the other night. Obviously, Rayshon Jenkins, I think he deserves a few votes for MVP for the league because that guy, he's basically won two games for them. I know Josh Allen got the scoop and score, but Rayshon made that play happen. So, you know, this is, like I said, it's a 1-point spread. It's at the bank, TIA Bank Field in Jacksonville. Who do you like in this game on Saturday night?
Yeah, it's tough. It's so early in the week. I wasn't expecting the prediction, but it's going to be a close one. I don't think that either team will pull away that early. I think it's going to come down to the wire again for this Jaguar team. If I had to choose a score right now, and it might change later in the week, but I think that the Jags can pull it out. I think they'll win 28-24, something like that. I think it's going to be a close game. I think that they're just going to pull it out of their hat, just like they have, you know, the past, you know, several games. So it's going to be interesting, but I like the Jags in this one.
Do you think the Jaguars become the biggest fans of the Miami Dolphins? Because let's say they upset the Bills, it would be the Dolphins getting the Chiefs instead of the Jaguars if the Jaguars win.
Absolutely. I think that's that's a situation where, you know, on one hand, they have played at Kansas City already before. They played okay during that game. It could have been a lot worse. But, you know, absolutely. I mean, you don't want to have to face Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs if you can help it. So, you know, being able to go up to Cincy or wherever they would go at that point would probably be a plus.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, so many good teams. It's going to be fun to watch. Last question for you, Demetrius, because I think that this is kind of funny. Prior on the show, I had Joe Shad from the Palm Beach Post, who covers the Dolphins, and I had Luke Easterling, who covers the Buccaneers for BucksWire.com and USA Today, and I asked them, out of the three teams in the state that are in the playoffs, whose chances do you like to win their game on Saturday or Sunday or Monday? Because we've got one game each day. And I asked them who they like best, and both of them said that they would take the Jaguars. So my question to you, Demetrius, considering you've covered this team for years, had someone 365 days ago come to you and said all three state teams would make the playoffs and the Jags would have the best chance to win, what type of look would you have given me?
I would have probably just had a blank stare and probably walked away from that conversation, because there would have been no way I would have been able to predict this. I don't think anybody had saw this coming, unless you're just a diehard homer, you know, fan. It's incredible what they've done. And I agree. I think that the Jags are the most likely out of all three of those teams, considering the matchups, to be able to advance to the next round. And that's just incredible.
I also think that for fans who are watching this game, and I know I was talking to somebody who turned the game off in the third quarter the other night just expecting the Jaguars to lose. If the Jaguars are down by 7 or 10 or 13 points, do not turn the television off, because all they do is come back late. Look at Dallas. Look at the Raiders. Look at the Ravens. Look at the Titans. So, you know, Demetrius, we can't have anybody turning off, can they?
No, absolutely not. You got to keep it going throughout the entire time. I was actually driving in and listening to the radio, and a fan got on there and said that there was a guy in his section that was trying to you know, leave during the third quarter. I guess that kind of that same sort of point where people thought that they would lose. And his daughter said, no, let's just stay. So they stayed, and they were able to see that incredible, you know, fun ending. I mean, I couldn't have predicted that ending. So definitely just stay and watch, and don't leave your TV screens. I think this is a different Jaguar team. I think there's always a chance when you have that kind of quarterback, when you have that opportunistic defense that they've been all season, there's always a chance.
All righty. Well, Demetrius, as always, I appreciate it. And I look forward to actually getting to sit in a press box with you, as I'll be traveling up there to Jacksonville this weekend to watch that game.
Absolutely. I can't wait.
All righty. Well, great. I appreciate it again. Demetrius Harvey, who works for the Florida Times Union in Jacksonville. You can read all of his stuff at jacksonville.com. And that's going to do it for this episode of the State of Florida Sports Podcast. I'm Tim Walters. And to quote Hall of Fame quarterback Troy Aikman, the thing I've always liked about the playoffs is the finality of it and knowing there's so much importance on every play. Yes, there is, Troy. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. from the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.